Gerry Kelly.
Well, despite Gregory's diatribe, he makes a point very effectively, perhaps by accident. He said, if there is evidence, bring it to the court and deal it through the court. So you either believe in the rule of law and Gregory and Ruth and the rest of us do, or you don't. Now, she got bail. It was a court give her bail. Martin Corey got bail. It was a court give him bail. They should be released. I have a position. I happen to be an ex-lifer. There should never be a circumstance where someone is their license is revoked. You get out of jail, there's reasons to get out of jail, you're free, and that's the way it should be. The idea that they have in some way lost the royal prerogative that she was released on is just not credible. It's not believable by anybody's stretch of the imagination. And one of the reasons I say that is because you can actually get your prison record now on disk. And I got my prison record on disk and everything was on it. They are very diligent about keeping these records. So
is that
I
quite
simply,
a large disk
I simply,
or a small one?
Well, it is a large disk and I'm quite proud of it as well, Gregory, as you know.
It may be.
And if you want a discussion about that, we'll have a discussion about that. But
we haven't got enough time.
You haven't enough time. And don't be jealous, you know, just because you want to like... some of us have histories to be proud of. But I don't want to be flippant on an issue like this. The facts are very, very clear in the case of both Marion Price and Martin Corey. The courts let them out in bail. Whatever, you know, the opinion from Gregory or anybody else is about so-called intelligence and all the rest, the fact is you believe in the court, you don't believe in the court. The court said release them. And Owen Paterson put them back in jail. That's basically what's happened here. They should be released. They should be released immediately. And if there's evidence against anybody, then it's the court which has to decide upon that, not some agent who comes over here from England to make his decision.
George, you're over here, but you're no agent. Have you had an opportunity to, to look at this?
Some have bigger discs than others, but if we get fixated on comparing each other's discs, we'll never move forward. And so I sat out the last discussion on the Orange Order. You never called me, that's the truth, but I was glad to sit it out because it struck me as a throwback to the past. And so is this. I mean, Gregory, the courts freed these two people. And you're a man that believes in the courts. So they should be free. I don't support the political line of Marion Price. Let me be candid about that. And I've no idea if she were released, if she would go on to commit other offences. But if she did go on to commit other offences, she would no doubt be arrested, tried, and convicted or otherwise for any subsequent offences that she carried out. The point is, I just spoke to her, actually, on the telephone for the first time in my life because I was talking to her husband when she was allowed a telephone call to him, and I happened to be standing there. And she's not a well woman. For all this damning with faint praise that Ruth did about the miraculous recovery and all the rest, I'll tell you this, she sounds a sick and ill woman to me. So we've got an ill woman. We've got an ill woman that the courts have decreed should be released. I don't know how anybody could argue against that. I think that it's time to free Marion Price.
Okay, I've got a couple of comments over here. If you could just. Okay, I'm just going to ask you to wait because there's a gentleman with the microphone at the back. So if we just let. Okay, you have to shout up.
Is that the Court of Justice you're talking about?
Okay, gentleman at the back who now has the microphone, please.
As a Republican ex-prisoner, I think that all Republican ex-prisoners should be quite happy and quite satisfied to sign up to the issue of the release of Marion Price here. And I think that it goes without saying that anybody with any sense would have absolutely no problem whatsoever in supporting the right of this woman to either a fair trial or a release.
Okay. It's a gentleman here, very short. A new question and a very brief question, please, because we are running out of time.
Well, my question to the panel is, in your view, are the Quinns being fairly treated?
Okay. Gerry, I'm going to start with you because Michelle Gildernew has been quite supportive. Mary Lou McDonald has taken a more strict down the middle line by saying justice should be done. So where do you stand on this? Where does the party stand?
Well, here's the way the debate goes. Sean Quinn was a billionaire, and by his own words, he has said that he did wrong. There's people, relatives, being accused of hiding money, et cetera, et cetera. And then we have, on the other hand, bankers who have been misabusing and abusing people's money, ordinary people's money, over a period of many years. So there is a bit of a dichotomy and there is a bit of a mixed message in this. Is Sean Quinn wrong in trying to hide the money? Yes, he is. Is he being used as a bit of a scapegoat instead of dealing with the bankers who are at the core and the bottom of all the troubles that have afflicted the whole island of Ireland?
Some of the bankers have been charged.
No, I understand that, but let me make my point. You're right. And, you know, we'll see where the charges go. I haven't been a prisoner. I've seen people getting 20 years for robbing a shop and white-collar embezzlers stealing billions of pounds, getting 3 months suspended. So we'll see where that goes, you know. So the answer to your question is a bit ambivalent. And that's my view of it. They are using him as a scapegoat. Has he done wrong? Yes, he has done wrong. I mean, it wasn't his own money he was using. Let's not be fooled. Nobody earns £1 billion or £2 billion. So he was also using the money that belonged to the ordinary people as well. And he has to take responsibility for that as well. But I do believe there's a bit of a use him as a scapegoat instead of the bankers, the golden circle that was there for many, many years.
Ruth, everybody in the Republic who has an insurance policy is paying a levy because of Sean Quinn at the moment. Where do you stand on that?
Because Sean Quinn ran that insurance company irresponsibly, and because there wasn't enough money in it to meet its liabilities, and the Irish taxpayer is being landed with a bill of more than £1 billion. He isn't a charming chap who produced jobs for his neighbours out of the goodness of his heart. He became extremely rich. He became extremely greedy, and he really thought he could get away with anything. He eventually, in fact, became a banker. That he did. He owned quite a lot of the Anglo-Irish Bank. I hate this business of, if he's one of our own, we must let him away with it because somehow it's all right. That may be okay in Fermanagh at the moment. That man has squirreled away at the moment £500 million, which belongs to the Irish state now. I don't see why we're giving him any sympathy.
Can I just, very, very unscientific, but if you could raise your hand if you support Sean Quinn. Sorry, Who's with him? Just give me a moment.
Sorry, could I just say, as a Dublin man, I'm disgusted at Gerry Kelly's remarks.
I don't think being from Dublin makes any difference.
I'm a Dublin man. I'm living up here as a church minister, Gerry. Are you saying that the Quinns are right to show contempt for an Irish court? And would you repeat the same thing if you were down in Dublin? And does your party take the same line that you're taking?
Tell me this. Do you be disgusted because you don't listen to me? Or do you just be disgusted because you're from Dublin? I mean, what relevance is it that you're from Dublin in the first place? Well, then listen to... I know that. And listen. Okay. And you need to listen to what I said. I didn't come out in support of Sean Quinn. The question was asked honestly, and I gave an honest answer. I said there was an ambivalence in me. I said he had done wrong. He had used ordinary people's monies, that bankers had done the same, And yes, that I was afraid that it'd be used as a scapegoat instead of the other bankers. Now, how you interpret that as me backing Sean Quinn, I don't know. So listen when I talk.
I'm going to give you a very brief news flash before we continue on with our debate about the Quinns. Paddy Barnes has won his fight. Which means, as you know, he is now guaranteed a silver medal and hopefully a gold. Just to finish that small unscientific survey, once again, if you support Sean Quinn and you're with him and you believe him, hands up. Okay, and if you don't believe what he's saying and you're against him, well, okay, that's what the Belfast audience thinks. We know what the Dublin man thinks. There's quite a few wanting to come in. There's a gentleman over here holding his glasses up. Microphone is jogging its way to you. If you just give us a second, it's best that everybody hears you, and then I'll come to you.
I would just like to direct this question at Gerry in relation to the Sinn Féin Member of Parliament for Fermanagh South Tyrone, who has been promoting active support for Sean Quinn and Peter Dara Quinn. And it just sounds a little bit suspicious that the Dublin Sinn Féin politicians are very anti-Sean Quinn, while Sinn Féin members of Parliament and politicians along the border with apparent close associations with the Quinns are actively supporting them. Now,
I'm going to stop you there.
Just a quick, broader question. Now, people suspect that Sean Quinn has been contributing to political parties along the border to gain support. And would Gerry perhaps agree that it might be time to open up the books of political parties to see
It's a good double-barrel question. Let me try and answer it.
Okay. let's just first ask, is Sean Quinn a contributor to Sinn Féin?
Well, I'm not the treasurer, but I would...
Well, listen.
You need to let me finish. I'm not the treasurer, but I would be fairly solid in saying that no, he doesn't. Okay? Now, that's the first thing. So if people... And remember, we are the ones who ask for the books to be opened up. We happen to be the party who puts it on our website. We're the only party that does it. We're the ones who want to do away with secret donations. So we're completely open with our books. Ask the other parties who are heading what's there. So you'll find out if you go to our website whether he does or not very quickly, right? And he doesn't now. Now, I'm an MLA from North Belfast. I'm against what the Quinns are doing. I thought I made that clear, but I give an honest answer to the guy that there's an ambivalence. You have to be able to understand the ambivalence around the border. The fact is that the people who came out in support of them were people who got jobs. Now, that's why they're backing them. You have to understand the parochial as well as the national.
Okay, there's a lady here who would like to ask a question. Is there a microphone anywhere near? If you could jog round, please. This is a comment, not a question, please, at this point. Okay.
It really wasn't about the Quinns, because I'm not concerned about their millions. What I want to ask, it's connected to money and everything that flows from it. My question was to Gregory. I'm sure George agrees with this question. Gregory, you sit in Westminster. As Irish people, we don't get the right to support or vote Tory, Lib Dem or Labour. We just have to take what they dish out. Now, my comment to you is, today on the radio, it said, yet again, there's no growth. No growth at all. I have a daughter who was made redundant from a retail store that went into administration. She now got another job after 7 months and was told today they don't think they'll be there at Christmas. Another retail store in Belfast that's going to the wall. Let me ask you, Gregory, not as a unionist and not to me as a Catholic, but as a man who sits in Parliament, could you not speak for the Irish people in the north of Ireland and find a way to get some jobs, somebody who gives a damn about the people in the north of Ireland?
Okay.
Forget their politics and their religion. We all need to pay our bills and feed our children, and that's more important to me than the Orange Order or anybody else.
Okay, Gregory?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a plea from the heart, and that is something that should unite us. I mean, what we need to do, I mean, we all know what the background is. It's the worst recession in living memory. You know, it's cold comfort that, you know, that our unemployment rate is lower than the rest of the UK and less than half of what it is in the Republic. That's cold comfort because of what everybody's going through. So there is hope. There is definitely hope in terms of political parties needing to try and bring, and we need to bring, whether we like it or not, forget about the politics of left and right, we need to try and bring greater private sector investment into Northern Ireland to try and offer jobs to everybody, not the Protestants or Catholics, to everybody. That is something that unites us, and we've got to try and deliver that, I would say, in the next 2 or 3 years. Hopefully this recession will begin to ease and give us a better opportunity. It's more difficult, obviously, in the climate of an international... Yeah, I accept that. I accept that. And, you know, that's why we need to try and get a unity of purpose to try and bring investment into Northern Ireland so everybody can benefit from it.
George, I noticed looking on your website you were saying that your own constituency has suffered the greatest yearly increase in unemployment of all of Britain's 650 constituencies. So this is as much an issue in Bradford as it is in Belfast?
Very much so. Very much so. It has become an economic disaster area. It's a national emergency. It's got the fastest growing rate of youth unemployment, the fastest growing rate of unemployment. It's got the highest child poverty rates in the country. It's got the 8th worst schools out of 151 in the country. It is a very big mess that the duopoly, the Tweedledee, Tweedledum politics in Britain, at least on the other side of the water. There's different parties here, I recognise, and they are rather different from each other. But I'm afraid in Britain, it's two cheeks of the same backside. Or if a backside could have three cheeks, then Labour, Tory and Liberal Democrat would be those three backsides. And the risk of continuing the metaphor too far, you couldn't slip a cigarette paper between them in terms of their approach to the economy. And it's the fact that I, in the by-election, proposed something entirely different, radically different, that accounts, Gregory, for my very, very handsome majority. It's the truth that the mainstream consensus in Britain, I don't know the stand of the DUP on these economic questions, but in Britain, it's the mainstream consensus that poor people have to pay the price for crimes and mistakes committed by rich people. And we absolutely reject that. We say that the mass of the people, the ordinary people in the country, need the opposite of what this Tory condemned coalition is giving them. Instead of cutting public expenditure, we should be increasing public expenditure. Instead of allowing our public services and our public infrastructure to rot and crumble, we should be investing in it. That's to some extent what President Obama has done in the United States. And if President Roosevelt had not done it in the Depression of the 1930s, they would never have come out of the slump. So this is not a time for cutting government involvement in the economy. This is a time for increasing government involvement in the economy. Of course, if the chimera that Gregory conjures forth of private sector activity were to emerge and become reality, I'd be very happy. I'm not against private sector involvement. But if you just sit waiting for the private sector to start employing people, then the unemployment in this country is going to multiply and multiply, and we'll be in a very dangerous situation. Indeed, I believe that we are, across Europe as a whole, on the brink of very, very serious political, economic, and social crises. And someone has to step forward and offer leadership for how we can get out of this. And it won't come from the prevailing orthodoxy of the Tweedledee and Tweedledum.
Okay, there's a gentleman at the back. Let's hear you.
On the issue of money and jobs, I don't know if people are aware that the government's in the process of pumping hundreds and hundreds of millions of pounds into weapons of mass destruction in the form of Trident. I'd be interested to hear what the panel would sound, or what views of the panel on getting rid of Trident and putting money into people instead of bombs.
Okay, Ruth, would you like to pick up on that just briefly?
Right. I do think that the first and most important function of a government is to defend the country. I don't know whether that could be done satisfactorily without Trident, but I'm certainly not going to make a cheap point and say get rid of Trident and then we'll all have plenty of money, because it isn't like that. We have to be properly defended. That's the first thing. The second thing is, I mean, it's lovely to say throw money at public works, at construction, at whatever it is, but that is not practical. There isn't any money, and there isn't any money because what happened was capitalism is fine if it has to bear the consequences of its actions. And what happened was that, for instance, the banks were allowed to get too big to fail. The banks should have been allowed to fail. It would have been perfectly reasonable for the governments in all the countries of Europe and in America to say, we will protect the depositors, we will not protect the investors, we will not protect the bondholders, the banks have to go. Because if they weren't allowed, if they don't go, they will never learn their lesson. That's why every year you have the bonuses back, because they can do what they like, because they will be bailed out by the state. That is insane. I think capitalism works extremely well, socialism doesn't, but capitalism only works if people reap the whirlwind of their inefficiency and their greed and the rest of it. And that is not what has happened, and that is why we're in the mess we're in. That and the euro, which was constructed without thought, in pursuit of some daft vision, and which has landed us all in a terrible mess. And the reason we can't get out of it is because we're continuing to support these blasted banks, which every week are coming up with some new dreadful scandal, like Sandra Charter today. We're now learning about that. So that's my view on it. There isn't a... I mean, George will have lots of bright ideas, but they will not actually have any relation to reality. And the reality is there isn't any money and no politicians have the nerve to take on the banks.
OK, Ruth, I'm afraid that's going to have to be the last word on that issue, because we are almost at 9:30, well out of time. I'm just going to ask all of the panellists very, very briefly to sum up. Let's talk about something a bit happier. The Olympics, your favourite moment, George?
I haven't seen a single moment of the Olympics. Not a single moment. But I did say on the radio this morning, I already know enough from what I've heard on the radio and read in the newspapers that I was altogether too churlish about the Olympics. I argued that as we were actually quite rich when we won them, but bankrupt when we staged them, that could we not give them back? But actually, I think in terms of making people feel better, in terms of probably on balance a net economic benefit, I did not believe the British state was in any longer in a state to be able to manage games as big as these. And so far, touch wood, I've been proved wrong about that also. And I certainly didn't believe that the athletes in our country were remotely capable of the performances and medal-winning victories that they have. So here's a politician saying I was wrong.
Gregory, your moment will no doubt involve water, men from Coleraine.
Yeah, that presumption was right. But George there talked about seeing something on radio this morning, and I just wondered, I couldn't get my head around that. But my favourite moment was not just Alan Campbell winning the bronze medal, but it was just after he won the medal. There's this a little watched clip of the BBC which shows you Steve Redgrave going down to help him because he was absolutely out of it. He'd given everything. He could hardly walk. He could hardly talk. He was completely and utterly shattered. Steve Redgrave gets him up, walks him. He says, "You'll thank me for this whenever I do this." And he sits him down. And the really, really emotional part for me was whenever Alan Campbell turned to the legend that is Steve Redgrave and said, "I'm sorry." He's sorry for winning the bronze medal. He's sorry for winning the bronze medal. That was the moment for me.
Okay, Ruth.
I haven't watched sport for years, and I was a classic grumpy Londoner about the Olympics until they started. I watched on Saturday. I watched the long jump. I watched Jessica Ennis. I watched Mo Farah. And I was transported. And I spent most of Sunday watching sport as well. So like George, I was wrong. But I want to say something more than that. The sheer joy of it as a Londoner now, which I am, has been the extraordinary, the generosity of the British audiences. It's not just that they are cheering for their own. It is that they are cheering for everybody with guts and determination, who's worked hard, who's tried hardest. They are responding to it. They're wonderful role models, these people. Absolutely stunning. I think it's raised the spirits and put a bit of grit into us. And I also want to say a good word here for John Major, who brought in the lottery and insisted that a large chunk of it was to go towards sport. And if it hadn't been for the lottery money, we wouldn't have any winners at all.
Jerry, not for the first time in your presence, there is a helicopter hovering overhead. So before it drowns us out completely, your favourite Olympic moment?
It's clearly here for George. My favourite moment in the Olympics was about 15 minutes ago when you told me Paddy Barnes had won the medal. And outside of that, he is from North Belfast, and outside of that, I watched it periodically. I didn't watch, but Katie Taylor was unbelievable. I have to say, unbelievable. And I hope she gets right through the day.
Okay. Thank you very much. Apologies to those of you who didn't get a chance to ask a question or make a comment, as usual. Everybody had so much to say that we just ran out of time and indeed ran over time. Can I just thank, please, a special thank you to our signers this evening, Rosie Budd and James Bailey. From the organisation Action on Hearing Loss, thank you very much for your services this evening. And that concludes tonight's event. Thank you very much and safe home.
Can I just, on your behalf, thank Yvette Shapiro? This was the night of one-liners. She did a fantastic job, so thank you very much, Yvette. And let's have a big round of applause for Mickey Conlon, our own West Belfast medal winner as well.
No.
Yes.